Brothers and sisters, I'll be speaking today about Bible study tools, and that's the basis of my prayer. Father in the heavens, I beseech you to smite us with conviction about issues of humility, for indeed knowledge puffeth up. I ask that you give me the grace to talk about this important topic while maintaining a sober mind about our limitations, for all things that we do come by your grace. I just ask now for the grace to talk about this topic adequately. In the name and through the blood of Yahshua the Messiah. Amen. Hallelujah. Oh, yes. It's okay if you stack them up. Brothers and sisters, my message today is about Bible study tools. Thanks so much to Chris and Andrew. I made a last-minute decision to pile these up out here. I might be grabbing them. I don't like turning my back to the congregation, but it might be useful to let you see physical Bible tools. Today is Sabbath, May 25th. I'm Michael Bannock from Fulton, Missouri. May all the grace of Yahshua be yours. This is titled Bible Study Tools and Limitations. I'm going to give you the outline of where we're going today. Let me take a look at the clock so I don't run overtime. Excuse me. I'm going to talk about the weightier matters of the law first. We're going to talk about being ready to enter this realm of Bible study tools. I'll explain the difference between a dictionary and a lexicon. I'm going to discuss some common misunderstandings when we enter this realm of Bible study. I'll talk about questions that the tools help to answer. The only reason we want these tools is to answer questions we cannot answer on our own. We have tools that help you find verses. We have tools that help you find words. We have tools that help you understand words. We'll discover that the Strong's numbering system is ubiquitous. It's all over the place. What a gift from heaven that is. I'll spend some time talking about some exciting developments in the world of electronic tools, tools you would use on a computer or on the internet, and then a summary. But let us first talk about the weightier matters of the law. I have an image there of an electronic, I don't know, I think it's a scale of some kind. I'm going to ask this question a lot in the years ahead. If righteousness was your top priority, all that mattered was that you don't want to sin no more. No more sin. You hate it. You don't want anything to do with it. How differently would you arrange your life? What risks would you stop taking? Number two, if you were wrong about something, who would you trust to tell you about it? You know, when we stack up these Bible study tools, I know the camera can't see, probably can't see too well. One of those cameras can catch these things. Do you trust them? Many of them have beliefs and methods different than us. You see, it's possible to do in-depth Bible study and develop a sense of authenticity and verification for your beliefs. That sounds like a good thing. It can also become a hiding place where one can wallow in a sense of accomplishment without confronting themselves. And if you haven't seen it, stick around a little while, you'll see it. In the world of religion, this happens a lot. People like to just, there are some people who just like to drown themselves in Hebrew and Greek studies, Bible studies, historical studies. And it can puff them up. And they're no good for anybody. When you see it, it's kind of scary. There might be somebody in your space who's very damaged inside, very wounded. Their insides are like hamburger because of things that went wrong in their formative years. And so they find some comfort in reading Bible study tools. I'm just itchy, friends, that's all. And so going in-depth Bible study is a sense of, gives them a sense of what, escape. But there are other avenues of the escape the Bible talks about, visiting widows in their affliction, you know, that kind of thing. And I want you to be aware of this before you decide you're going to go down in there. In Hebrews 3:13, there's a warning, but encourage one another daily as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Sin will blind you. Sin will blind you, and you'll think, oh, I got all these answers, I got all this insight. But if in the backfield you've got some evil going on that you haven't confronted, your conclusions will be warped. Inasmuch as sin hardens the heart, one must be careful to have his affairs in order before presuming to drill down into the finer points of Scripture. If you haven't seen anybody violate this, stick around. Sooner or later, we'll have a visitor come in here with some crackpot theory. Sometimes just zooming in on one word, just one word in the Bible, building a whole theory around it. In Matthew 23:23-24, Yahshua sets the pace. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law: judgment, mercy, faith. These ought you to have done, and not leave the other undone. I should have underlined that, and not leave the other undone. He's saying, I want the big stuff as well as the little stuff. Yeah, Yahshua makes it clear. He wants the whole shebang. He does want tithe of mint, anise, and cumin. But he wants those weightier matters of the law fulfilled. You blind guides which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. You blind guides, that's a reference to their teaching ministry. They're blind. A little more on weightier matters of the law. I put a traffic light there with a caution sign on, a red light. Don't make the mistake committed by the scribes and Pharisees. Exercise caution when doing your own study. Be in a state of mature engagement and application of the scriptures, which speak to the weightier matters of the law: judgment, mercy, and faith. Then there's that famous quote from Micah 6:8, to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly before thy Elohim. To have the first and second greatest commandments in view, and the command to love one another as Yahshua loves us. If you're dedicated to those things, look at the first one in the list is judgment. The Hebrew Matthew says judgments of Torah. Yeah, we should be dedicated to justice, mercy, and faith. Yeah, if you don't have these things in view, if you're not engaging these principles regularly, confronting yourself, double-checking yourself, all this in-depth Bible study stuff I'm going to talk about won't do you a lick of good. Now, if you want to get ready to enter this realm, if you want to jump in your boat and paddle down that stream I have there, here's some principles you have to have in play. Number one is humility. How many times I felt I found something serious, important, big, and it turns out it was nothing. It was an empty paper bag. It was nothing. It was just an idea that didn't hold up. One thing you have to watch for is this belief that something is true because it ought to be true. I think something should be true, therefore it has to be true. Sometimes you find it isn't so. You have to have a love for verification through second and maybe third witnesses. For the really advanced stuff, I mean, we're going to start at simple things and go on to more advanced. But for advanced stuff, you need a command of language structure. Tense, case, mood, gender, things like that. You have to know your English. And English is a great vehicle for learning how languages work. If you can squeeze in another language, like if you're bilingual already. I'm delighted with the number of Spanish-speaking friends we've made here. Once you know how languages are structured and the variations, you're actually better able to understand Hebrew and Greek because you're understanding how things can be different, how people can change things and do them differently. I remember I took 4 years of Latin. I did not do well, but I did take 4 years of Latin. Now, my teacher tended to beat us up, okay? And I could call on the phone anybody in that class taught by that Catholic priest. And I could call anybody who was in that class and ask them, what are the rules for accenting Latin? And they probably imitate that teacher. Never accent the ultimo. What is the ultimo? What is the penult? What is the antipenult? These are basics of language that will impact your understanding of the accents. The deeper you want to go, the more you have to know these things. You're better off being humble than saying, I haven't gone that far yet. Let's give you some examples of these points of language. Tense, past, present, and future. Then there's past perfect. Future perfect. There's tenses you don't even know about. Future perfect. Future perfect tense. Like, by Tuesday we will have finished the job. That's a future tense. How about case, nominative, accusative, dative, genitive, vocative? Wonder how many know what genitive means. It's tempting to ask for a show of hands, but I don't want to embarrass anybody. Genitive means possessive. This is Michael's sermon, or the sermon of Michael. In these instances, Michael's in the genitive case because I own it. Vocative is a good one. I'm going to give you an example of vocative. We had somebody contact YRM over a decade ago, and a question came in, and they said, let's hand this one off to Bannock. Let's see if Bannock can handle this. Somebody was writing in and saying that the word, O Yahweh, in the scripture, somebody was adding to the word with the word O. Because you look at the interlinear, and the Hebrew doesn't have anything for the word O in there. O Yahweh. And so I wrote back, it was all by email, I said, this is an example of the vocative case where you're calling out to somebody. Michael! Oh, Yahweh! And even though the word oh isn't in there, it makes clear to the reader that this person's crying out to Yahweh. Nobody's adding to the word. They're trying to make it clear. Vocative case. The deeper you go, the more you have to know these things. Mood, indicative, just that's just a declarative sentence. Imperative might be an order. Help! Wake up! That's the imperative mood. How about the subjunctive mood? That's a big one for us. That's a big one for us. If you read literature on evolution, they're constantly saturating their literature with words in the subjunctive mood. It's for speculation. Life could have began with this chemical. It may have evolved this way. You look, it's subjunctive. It's like they're guessing. This might have happened. This could be. And conditional is kind of common sense. You know, if I get paid, I'll pay you. You know, it's a conditional statement. But these things become important if you want to drill down and go deep. Let's talk about dictionary versus lexicon. A dictionary is a general purpose lookup tool giving the meaning, usage, and sometimes origin of a word. And there's a snapshot of a dictionary entry for the word ahoy. And this is a peculiar word, ahoy. I'm going to highlight its explanation there. Definition A is INT dot. When you start doing in-depth study, you have to get used to these abbreviations because they want to save ink. They want to save paper. A means it's an interjection. It's just an interjection. It's a word that's injected into a conversation. Ahoy! Hello! Goodbye! Whoa! It's a nautical call used in hailing. Well, dictionary is general purpose. It covers a wide range of areas. But a lexicon is a specialized dictionary targeting the language of a culture, people, profession, philosophy, etc. We have lexicons, for example, in the medical field. We are most interested in Hebrew and Greek lexicons and somewhat Aramaic. Gives me a lift to see Brother Ryan down there is exploring Aramaic because it was a major language in Yahshua's time. So I'm sure he has some kind of lexicon down there, or he's going to get one for Aramaic. But most of our study occurs in Greek and Hebrew. Now, we're going to talk about a common misunderstanding. If you want to start doing in-depth Bible study, go into some of these tools. Got to clear the air on something. I could grab, is this one? Here we go. This is the Brown Driver Briggs Hebrew English Lexicon. This is the Jacinius Lexicon. Now, suppose I take the Jacinius and I look up something and I come to you and I say, I looked it up. I went right to the Hebrew. And I really believe that. Turns out it's not true. Yeah, I'm using a quality reference, highly regarded. But the truth is, there's at least one person between me and the Hebrew. And Jacinius is a pretty important case to consider the limitations of what you're trying to do when you go deep. You see, Jacinius was a German guy. And he wrote about Hebrew in the Latin language. And a guy named Tregellis, an Englishman, translated all that for us. So think about this. A German guy writes in Latin about Hebrew, and an English guy translates it for me. But I'm going to say, I went right to the Hebrew. No, that's not how it works. When you go into this realm, you're entering a cloud of witnesses. It is staggering. Breathtaking, the giants they stand on to get these words right, the research they do. And the best scholars will always say this is our best attempt to understand these things. It doesn't get any better for Brown Driver Briggs. I think that's on the next slide. I remember learning that Jacinius's lexicon had so many bank shots before it got to me. So I thought, well, let me look up Brown Driver Briggs. Brown Driver Briggs is a slight improvement over the situation. It's a major work. But you see, Jacinius wrote in many languages about Hebrew. And Brown Driver Briggs took all of Jacinius's work, not just the Latin. They took all his work and they recompiled it. Hey, the light went out. I don't need it, but for a moment there, I thought they didn't pay the bill. Okay, we'll just get by without that. But these guys, Brown Driver Briggs, they took all of Jacinius's work and compiled it for me. So it's still one guy's work, making many bank shots before it gets to me. Are you getting a taste of the humility you have to have as you approach these things? I don't want to make it sound like it's uncertain, but on the other hand, I have read that a good fraction of the words in the Bible are only used once. We're still not sure what the coat of many colors is. There's no such thing as going right to the Hebrew. Hebrew is sustained in pockets of Judaism and scholarship worldwide through the ages. And the role of foreign languages in establishing the meaning of Hebrew is critical. Particularly Greek. We know a lot about Greek. We know more about Greek probably than any other language. It has become a kind of a linchpin, an anchor point. I'm going to give you an example of how the meanings of these words are sustained. Look, I can guarantee you, for the Hebrew word for dog, Caleb, where we get that guy Caleb, Joshua's buddy, Caleb, I guarantee you that nobody 3,000 years ago wrote down and said, Caleb equals D-O-G. Nobody did that 3,000 years ago. The meaning of that word had to be sustained from generation to generation in new cultures and new contexts. Now, suppose there was a Russian Jew in the late Middle Ages, and he wants to teach his boy what the Hebrew word Caleb means. Well, he'll point to a dog. Now, the Russian word for dog is suboka. I have about 2 years of Russian. Okay, he points to a dog. He says to his child, suboka. Then he points to the Bible and says, Caleb. Now the kid knows Caleb means suboka, which means dog. And this goes on generation to generation, culture to culture. And that's how words are sustained. Don't think somebody sat down in the dark, you know, in antiquity and wrote down Caleb equals D-O-G. No, people work very hard. And when you drill down, it'll take your breath away. They will extract knowledge from scraps of parchment, engravings, ancient writings. Okay, another misunderstanding is that all Hebrew comes from the Bible. And I understand the desire to be pure. The Bible will have the last word. But suppose we want to understand something in there. You will be tempted to reject linguistic evidence if it exists outside the Bible. Here's the reality. Languages exist before a revelation is given. Do not think Yahweh downloads a revelation to a prophet or a people, and along with that comes a language. No, it doesn't work that way. When Yahweh shouted the Ten Commandments at the top of the mountain, they already knew Hebrew. They already knew that. The language is there first, and then Yahweh does the revelation through that. That's exactly what happened in Acts chapter 2. They came in with all kinds of languages and dialects, and they heard the good news in their own language. The language is there first, and then Yahweh reveals himself through that. That's why professional linguists and Hebraicists have no problem accessing supportive information outside the Bible. And this is where our study tools come from. As you'll see in a bit, they're tapping into knowledge of related languages. Well, we know in Ugaritic Hebrew it means this, and Mandean Hebrew it means something like that. And then they'll make a decision what a Hebrew word means based on the context and everything else. It's a part of life. And I know it's so good to say, oh, I went right to the Hebrew, but you don't know what these guys went through to put this stuff together. There are questions that the tools help to answer, and that's why we want to use the tools. One question that comes up a lot is, where's that word in the Bible? Another one is, where's that verse? Where am I going to find that verse? And then you go find the verse, and then you want to know, what does that key word really mean? Or what is the origin of that word? That's really what these tools are for. Find verses, find words, zoom in on a key word, find out what it means, compare it to other places where it's translated. I haven't done this one in a while, and it's not in my notes, but there's a famous passage, study to show thyself approved. Study to show thyself approved. You look up the word for study, and it means work. Right there, looking back at you, is the word for work. And so I suppose somebody's going to look it up now that I made a point of it, but why would they translate that study instead of work? And maybe it's a no-works theology behind that? That's the kind of stuff these tools are for. Let's talk about where is that word. Suppose you want to find a word. There's a word you know that's part of a verse, but you want to know where that word is, and you use concordances for that. I have reason to believe most of you know what a concordance is, but Strong's Concordance is the big one. There's a photograph there showing many editions of the same work. It's the most popular, and it is the starting point for many research journeys. Hold on now. This is my original Strong's Concordance. This is bought sometime before my baptism. Now, after my... I'll tell you. I was baptized at Trumpets, 1980, okay? After that, I was convicted to read the Bible cover to cover. And probably the reason I don't want to throw this away is because as I was reading the Bible cover to cover, I was putting all these notes in here, in the back and in the sheet here. So this has sentimental value. But in the light of modern tools, it's still available, but it's available in electronic form. But I'll show you an image inside there. Suppose you want to find the word catch. You want to find everywhere the word catch appears. So you zoom in on the, it's listed in English alphabetical order. And there I've zoomed in on a picture of it. Now you can find almost anything now on archive.org. And rather than mess around with a camera and a scanner of my own, I just went there and did some screen captures from any of these. Now we have some listings there for catch, and he tells us, see also catcheth, which would be Old English for catches, and look for caught. Strong is telling us to look for other English versions of the word you're seeking. And we see entries for the word catch showing up, oh, I'm going to guess, a dozen times or so. Exodus 22:6, if a fire break out and catches, I don't know what, you only get a portion of the phrase there, the passage. In Judges 2:21, and catches you every man his wife. Boy, I'd like to know what that's about. Let's see. I highlighted there that there's a number associated with that. I want to draw your attention to the far right column. Those are Strong's concordance numbers. He gives you a unique number for every unique word in the Bible. Now, every unique word could still have alternate spellings depending on case, tense, mood, and the things I mentioned earlier. But for every unique word, he gives you a unique number. This, friends, this numbering system will prove to be the most important thing for everyday people like you and me. These Strong's numbers allow us to navigate through shark-infested waters. It's a wonderful way to chase words through the Bible. I just highlight the fact that Strong's number 2414 for catch shows up twice. Yeah, the second entry there is Psalm 10:9. He lies in wait to catch the poor. It shows up twice. He doth catch the poor. You know, sometimes I pray for people in trouble, and I'll pray it through Psalm 10. I recognize that line. Now, down at the bottom of that list on the far right, you see all these Strong's numbers. Perhaps most of you already know what I'm trying to tell you, but you'll see the last three are in italics. That means that they are the Greek Strong numbers. Mr. Strong, or Dr. Strong, gave us two dictionaries. They're actually lexicons, two of them, one for Greek and one for Hebrew. Anyway, it's generous of him to give us other places to look for similar words. Then you go to the lexicon in the back. You look up the the Strong's number in the back. You don't have to know Hebrew. You don't have to know anything about Hebrew. You just look up the number. And you see it's the word cut off. Let's look at entry 2414. It gives you the Hebrew spelling with vowel points. We know the vowel points are not ancient, but they're useful. And most of the big scholars use them. Cut off. It gives you a transcription, a sound transcription. We sometimes call it transliteration. And there's some diacritical marks that should guide us. The first syllable has a caret. I forget the name of that thing. Is that a schwa? Has a caret over the A, ka. And then the second syllable, tough. There's some kind of mark under the T suggesting it's a hard T. Then he gives us a transcription in something that's easier to read. It's in italics, ka tough. And as always with Hebrew, you see emphasis on the second syllable. A primitive root, to clutch, hence to seize as a prisoner. Now there he's explaining the word. That's the basic meaning of the word. Then you see a dash after the word prisoner. I hope it's sufficiently clear. It's been translated as catch. After the dash is all the ways the word has been translated in your Bible. Let's go with another example, just a totally different word in the same general area there. Kana, kana. I'm going to decode this for you. 2583, somebody found that number by looking it up, you know, in the meat of the book. Now he's going to the back. He sees the Hebrew spelling. Now, for most of my life, I ignored the vowel points. I'm just getting comfortable with them now. But the transcription, kana, is correct, given those vowel points. And he gives it to us in simple-to-read English letters in italics. He explains it as a primitive root. Compare it, he invites us, compare it to number 2603. That'll be a related word. It properly means to incline, by implication to decline. And then he gives you why he says that, of the slanting rays of the evening. There's a passage in the Bible that uses this word in reference to the slanting rays of evening. Notice how I'm interpreting the abbreviations on the fly. Specifically, to pitch a tent. Generally, to encamp for abode or siege. And then there's that dash. I highlight that big hyphen, that big dash. Up to that point, he's telling you what the word means, how it's viewed, how it's understood. Then, after the dash, he tells you all the ways in which it's translated. Abide in tents, camp, dwell, encamp, grow to an end, lie, as in lie down, pitch a tent, rest in a tent. A lot of people don't know this. They look at Strong's Concordance, it's just an ocean of words. But that big dash tells you how all the ways it's been translated. But here's what it doesn't tell you. It doesn't tell you how many times it was translated abide. It doesn't tell you how many times it was interpreted camp or dwell or in camp. We'll find this in other tools I'm going to talk about. But this Strong's Concordance was an absolute breakthrough for Bible students. And Dr. Strong had a team. Now, how these college guys work, they usually have undergraduate students or graduate students doing a lot of dirty work for them. But it was a staggering accomplishment to do this for all the words in the Bible. There's a picture of Dr. Strong. It provided a research tool which is unparalleled in the world of biblical research. Ordinary men and women can open up their Bible, look at a verse, find it in Strong's dictionary, I put it under here, put it in Strong's dictionary, find out what the number is for that keyword, and look it up for themselves. And we just owe such a debt of gratitude to him. Even though there are improvements in his lexicon since that time, the anchor point is the number. Now, just for honorable mention, I don't want to dwell on these. Before Strong's did that, there was a guy named Young who made this concordance. What a massive work. It's about as massive as Strong's. This was done in the early 1800s. A guy named Young. And he had a similar idea. Now, this image came from Wikipedia. And it happens to be on the word for keeper. What Young did is he took every English word and then showed you everywhere it appears in the Bible based on the Hebrew word. I know it's a little hard to see there. Yeah, I wish it was clearer. But what he does is he takes every word that's translated keeper in Hebrew, enters it there, and he tells you all the places that Hebrew word occurs. Strong's was an improvement on this. If I had known that, I wouldn't have bought Young's, okay? I wouldn't have bought it. I bought this maybe a decade ago or so. So Young's, I'm not saying it's a waste of time, but it's kind of a doorstop now. let's see. There's one more. It's down here at the bottom. Unbelievable, the people that worked before us. In the late 1700s, a guy named Cruden made something called the Cruden's Concordance. And so I happened to buy a little pocket edition thinking it would help me. This is just a plain, what's the word you're looking for? Here's where you find it. That's all it is. Here's the word you're looking for. Here's where you find it. but no insights as to Hebrew or Greek origin. There was a saying going around in the last quarter of the last century, Cruden's is for the crude, Young's is for the young, and Strong's is for the strong. And it seems to have held up over time. So the next first question I put out there is, where is that word? And these concordances do that for you. Then the other question is, where is that verse? I heard that verse somewhere. I know where it's in the Bible somewhere. Well, we use concordances to find a verse too, by searching for a key word within that verse. Best results come from seeking the location of a unique word within the verse you're looking for. Here's an example. Faith cometh by hearing. If you look for the word faith, you get hundreds of listings. But if you look for the word hearing, you get dozens of possibilities. It'll be much quicker to find the location you're looking for. Sometimes you hit a dead end. There are people who believe that there is a verse that says G-O-D helps them that help themselves. They think that's in the Bible. It's not. It was a saying uttered by Benjamin Franklin. You could do an exhaustive look, but you're not going to find it. But the tool you use to find a verse is the same tool you use to find a word. Now it gets serious. What does that word mean? And for that, we turn to dictionaries and lexicons. The lookup dictionary in Strong's is actually a lexicon. Through the latter half of the 20th century, the Jacinius Lexicon and the Brown Driver Briggs, which I held up earlier, they were the main sources of Hebrew-based study for us in our movement, among Christians in general. Let's take an example of Jacinius here. We're going to look at the word yod. I wonder if you can see. Yeah, that looks pretty clear up there, the word yod. And the basic meaning is the hand. That's the first part of a massive entry for the word yod. Where Strong's is just giving you about as much space as maybe three postage stamps, you know, for a word, typically. This thing with yod in the Jacinius is three pages. That's what a lexicon is in this realm. I circled a portion in the upper right area. I hope you can see it. That's Arabic. Jacinius is comparing this word to Arabic, an Arabic word that has a similar meaning and sound. We shouldn't let these things bother us. We want to be informed by the languages at play so that when we come to the revelation, we are armed with a deep understanding. There's a Hebrew word for feast called chagag or chag. There's two forms of the word, chagag or chag. Now, when our Muslim friends do their pilgrimage to Mecca, they call it hajj. Hajj. It's obviously related. So it's a good idea to go find out what that word means in the Arabic language, to learn more about it. The big guys have no problem checking in on cognate languages, related languages, checking out cognate words. And by the time this stuff comes to us, they've done all that dirty work for us, centuries of it. Now let's look at the Brown Driver Briggs entry for yod, or yad. That element I started with in the bottom, squared in red, that's yod. I'm going to jump ahead. Wait, see if I can jump ahead. No, I didn't. Okay, I didn't add it. It turns out he too has several pages for the word yod, like he should. I want to draw your attention to the numbers on the right. You see, these two great books were originally issued with no Strong's numbers in them. And then around the time I got into the faith, there were editions being published where the Strong's numbers were there to help us look it up. But look at those strong numbers, if you can see them. I wish at times I could do a zoom here. Those numbers are not in order. Strong number 3019 and 3018 for all these different words in there. 3025, 3016, 3027. They're not in order in Brown Driver Briggs. Well, there's a reason for that. Jacinius and Strong's come in alphabetical order for each unique word, alphabetical order for Hebrew. Every unique word will come in alphabetical order. Not every spelling, but, you know, the main word. Brown Driver Briggs comes in alphabetical order for each root word. Yeah, this is turning into a bit of a clinic, isn't it? But that was the idea. If you want to get into these things, these are some of the high points you got to know to navigate. Modern editions of these works have Strong's numbers in the margin. I don't know if you can see them from here, but in the margins, the numbers are here. Maybe the camera can zoom in. Strong's numbers are here in later editions of Jacinius. And for the most part, they come in numerical order. The Brown Driver Briggs is such a mess. Sorry. It's such a mess. You actually have to go to an index in the back of the book to find out what page to find your Strong's number. Remember I told you earlier that the work we get is never going to be going right to the Hebrew. The only way you could go right to the Hebrew is if you knew someone who was fluent in English and ancient biblical Hebrew. And I don't know how you could find somebody like that. But here's a description of Brown Driver Briggs' Hebrew and English lexicon. This gives you a flavor for the cast of characters involved. Based on the lexicon of William Jacinius, as translated by Edward Robertson, and edited with constant reference to the thesaurus of Jacinius, as completed by E. Rodiger, with authorized use of the German editions of Jacinius' Handwörterbuch über das Alte Testament. Well, what happened is these Brown Driver Briggs, what they're telling you is they had all this stuff spread out in front of them. Now, how many of you have done Bible studies like that? You had everything like way out in front of you. Strong's over here to help me find the Strong's number. Then all these dictionaries and lexicons to help me have a better idea of what the word means. I told you how to find the ways in which a word's translated in Strong's dictionary. But how do you know how many times it's translated that way? The answer is the Englishman's Concordance. That's kind of a wacky name for it, but this guy, George Wegram, his name is there on the book cover, he shows you all the places where a unique Hebrew or Greek word is found. Now, this happens to be the Greek Englishman's Concordance. And I'll show you how it works. If you look on the right, you'll see an image from within this Greek Englishman's Concordance. You have to know the Greek word. You got to know the Greek word. And these things were published for a long time. You had to know your Greek alphabet or your Hebrew alphabet if you're doing an Englishman's Hebrew Concordance. See if I have one here. Here we go. I got both of them. These are the hardcovers. This one's the Greek. Pretty sure. You got to know the Greek word to look it up. But if you see there, you can look up a Greek word and see all the ways it's translated. It's translated ministers, then minister, ministered, ministers, minister. All these little nuances and things. There are some cases you're going to have long lists of ways in which a particular word's translated. The downside is you have to know your Greek word. But this new version, it's coded to Strong's. And I put side by side the same entry, one where you have to know the old one, where you have to know your Greek word. And over the right, they give you the Strong's numbers. You can look up that way. I encircled in red, the word you're trying to look up. And in green, on the other corner, on the other side of the entry, you have a square root sign. And that means that that's the root word. This particular word is Strong's 3010 in Greek. The root is 3008 in Greek. And here it's only used once in the New Testament. Now down below, there's another word, 3011. But to the right, you have the two words that go together that make up that word. And we have a lot of compound words in Greek. And they have the same tool available in Hebrew. And the modern ones have the Strong's number in there too. How deep do you want to go? One of the most powerful tools we have is to know how many times a word is translated a certain way. So then when it's translated a different way, we can verify if somebody's trying to slip something in on us. And that does happen. We're almost done with these books. These interlinears are valuable. I just happen to have an image here of the interlinear Greek-English New Testament. And this guy, Jay Green, he's very active in promoting the textus receptus, the received text. He doesn't go for these older manuscripts that were found in Egypt. So he's really a conservative, stodgy kind of guy. His earliest editions, draw your attention to these two areas that have a square around them. You don't have to read them. But you really have to know your Greek to make sense of this. You have the Greek, and then you have the English word underneath, all that on the left. Then you have a near King James translation on the right. But you don't know what the Strong's numbers are. If you want to go look it up in lexicons, you have to know your Hebrew and Greek words. But here's a later edition, still by Jay Green. Now, in this snapshot, we have the Greek on the right. And I would have loved to have been there seeing them struggle with this, the typesetting, because they had the crowbar, the Strong's number, above each Greek word. And on the left, Jay Green does a King James-style translation. Here's a study tool. I have to work this in there. There's Restoration Study Bible. Now, this thing has pictures on the right, graphs, all kinds of graphs and charts. You know, I bought mine a couple years ago. I haven't even scratched the surface of all the tools in there. It's as though the team has been aggregating a lot of this stuff. Let's zoom in there on this one passage. Now, these images came from our webpage. There you have the Strong's number next to each English word. Let's think about this. The purpose of the Strong system is to bypass the Greek and Hebrew so you don't have to worry about it. And so this is a sufficient starting point for anybody. Now, they have the Strong's lexicon in the back. And they've removed the Greek and Hebrew spellings, but they give you the transcription so you know what it sounds like. But this thing has been a real blessing to many because you can tell at once what Hebrew and Greek words are being used. And sometimes in a passage you could say, oh, look, it's being used here, here, but not here. And it's being used again down there. We have three different editions that we offer. The one on the far right is paperback. A lot of those wind up in prisons because of the limitations on what they can allow in. But I'm really pleased with this Bible. We're going to get into a few more high-end ones. This is the Theological Word Book of the Old Testament by Harris Archer and Voltke. It focuses on selected words, but it uses Strong's numbers in Hebrew spellings. Once again, Strong's numbers looking back at you. Then there's Kittel's Theological Dictionary of the New Testament. It's a 10-volume set. These guys go deep. They took selected words from the Greek, and they go deep, particularly names. But for this particular thing, I've never seen one coded this strong. I don't think you need it if you're going to operate at this level. But this is serious business. Kittle didn't write this. He was only the editor. He had other people write it for him. Thayer's Greek Lexicon. More depth in the definitions than in Strong's. Now, the one that I've got an image of does not have Strong's numbers coded and keyed in the margin, but the book cover I show you does have that. That must have become a thing around the turn of the century to start blasting the Strong's numbers in there so people like you and me can start using these tools. Vine's Expository Dictionary. I got to make a confession here. I never got into this. I explored it for the sake of this presentation here. I dipped into this because Elder Allen suggested it. I was shocked. This is a real quality Bible study tool. I'm not exaggerating. If you're looking for something, I want to grab something and, you know, do some serious studying and reading. On one hand, it has a casual feel to it, but it's some real high-octane insights on Hebrew, Greek, how the languages operate. And modern editions are keyed to Strong. You'll see there I yellowed at the top of the book cover. Strong's numbers are in there. All my life, this thing's been right under my nose. Maybe that's why Alan's the elder, right? I'm not kidding you guys. This is, I want to see, I hope we have one down in the library because I'm going to look forward to thumbing through it. We have Bullinger's Companion Bible was important to us in our journey, in our movement. And the reason is because each page had tons of supporting information. I have a page image there on the screen. The red square, that's the scripture. The L-shaped chunk, that's the commentary, the explanatory notes, definitions, historical information. This thing was really popular. Almost every page looks like that. And then you got the appendices, have a wealth of information. Now, by the way, I'm not endorsing all of Bullinger's claims, okay? Gotta be careful with these guys. But this was a staggering amount of work. You know, I get the impression that in the 1800s and early 1900s, there were people working furiously to get these tools in place for us. The Companion Bible is a treasure. Let's talk about electronic tools. At times, I feel like the first 50 minutes of this presentation have been a boot camp. You guys have been patient. I see some of you have been, at times, look like you're languishing, and I understand. Somebody's got to do this dry stuff on occasion. I'm doing all I can to make it interesting. Let's talk about electronic tools. I'm going to start first with desktop and mobile apps. First one is eSword. eSword. This is free. I'm going to give you some screenshots. At the top, they're so small, even on the screen. I wonder if you see them here. There are tabs for all the different translations. If anybody wants to get my thumb drive, I got translation plugins for a lot of these various translations. But you got a Strong's Dictionary in the lower right-hand corner. You have a navigation pane. You can add your own study notes. They have, I guess this would be similar to what we did with the Restoration Study Bible. This is the King James with the Strong's numbers next to it, each word. And this happens to be a red letter King James. Here's another one. Here's the Hebrew with the Strong's number near each one. So you can click on the Strong's number in green. I know they look like little green fuzzies to you, but if you click on those Strong numbers, the definition will pop up in the lower right-hand corner. Here's the result of a search I did. Children to come to me. This is Yahshua inviting children. Matthew 19:14. I typed those words into the search bar, and I got all the verses that contain those words. I can also use phrases, and I can even search with a Strong's number. I don't know if you can see it well, but the search criteria there was Greek Strong's number 3813, and that was the word for children. I use this an awful lot because I'm trying to find trends. There's one I haven't looked up yet. You're going to use this tool. Somebody said that the city of Babylon is mentioned like second place in the Bible. The only thing more mentioned than Babylon is Jerusalem. I'm going to use this to look it up. I'll just count them because it tells me how many hits I got. eSword is now available as an app for mobile devices. I've been using desktop, but you can get it for Mac, iPad, Android, iPhone. Very powerful. I have a rich number of Bible translations, including the Word of Yahweh Bible from our friends in Michigan and the Scriptures from our friends in South Africa. And I'd love to get that to you if you want. Just let me know. But a new kid on the block, the mySword. It seems to be similar to, I never used this, but I wanted to be complete. Individual modules from eSword are said to be compatible with this, but it appears to be more of a multimedia experience with pictures, maps. That thing in the middle is a genealogy chart. It's really wonderful, the age we live in, the things that people are making. My sword also appears to be free. It's getting real serious now. I'm going to only got two more tools to talk about. The Bible Hub. Take all this stuff, all these books, been lugging them around all these years. And it's online. Every bit of it is online. Every bit of it. Bible Hub. Now, I'm not good at search using it like a Strong's Concordance, but you can do that. I know it's possible. I've done it a few times. I have to phrase everything just right. But just look there at the opening page. All these translations on the blue ribbon. NIV, New Literal Translation, ESV, English Standard Version, KJV, New King James, on and on and on. Darby Version, ISR, again, that's Institute for Scripture Research, our friends in South Africa. Down below, you have tools. They have a parallel tool that you can put in parallel different versions. You can have audio Bible. There's sermons. I'm trying to catch up with the sermons we give. But anyway, they got sermons there, visuals, commentaries. Interlinear, there we go. That's a big one. Lexicon, Strong's. There's Strong's again. I haven't even got to the next line. You got other tools there. I know what the LXX is. That's the Greek Septuagint of the Old Testament. But I just go to Genesis 1:1, and I say, give me, let me see, which one did I click on there? I think I clicked on I clicked on Hebrew. And I'm on Genesis 1:1, and I'm getting Strong's number. I'm getting the Hebrew word. I'm getting the English translation and the morphology. Now, what's the morphology? That's those things I talked about earlier. You hang on a word to slightly modify its or to adjust its presentation. As a preposition, if you look under morphology, I hope you can see that. It's a preposition. I forget what the B stands for. But after that comes reshit, beginning. That's N for noun, F for feminine, S for singular. Let's look down at Strong's 430. In the beginning, Elohim created the heaven and the earth. The word Elohim is a noun. MP means masculine plural. The word for the Almighty, Elohim, the plural form is used to amplify it. It's sometimes called plural of majesty. It still takes singular vowels. I'm sorry. Still take singular verbs. Do not think this means there's a bunch of deities up there. But that's a Hebrew method of amplifying something. So the best translation for Elohim is actually Almighty. So I went to another panel in Bible Hub. It gives me Strong's lexicon. It gives me parallel Strong's, parallel interpretations from different Bible versions, but it gives me Strong's lexicon entry for that. I go to another panel, and it gives me a true interlinear, and it gives me a transcription of what it sounds like. The top row is Strong's numbers. Then is a transcription in the Hebrew, what it sounds like. The Hebrew then below it with the vowel points, an English translation, and then all those things. It may not be clear up there. It looks pretty good here on the screen. But let's take the third from the right. There it is, Elohim. It's a noun, masculine, plural. You can click on those little blue things and it'll tell you what it means. This is dizzying. What am I doing with all these things? But I had to put you through all this to let you know the power we have today. Right at your fingertips. I remember a dear brother back east used to say, we have a copy of the covenant in every home in America. And now we have this. More on Bible Hub. They have Brown Driver Briggs. You have something, I never heard of this, NAS Exhaustive Concordance. Look at the right. There's the Englishman's Concordance. telling you everywhere that Hebrew word is used in the English Bibles. Finally, the Blue Letter Bible. Very much like the Bible Hub, I think I'm going to give the race to Blue Letter Bible. It appears to be more powerful. For each verse, you can click on tools. These are all free. This is all free online stuff. Click on the tools, and this is what you get, something similar. Those colored tabs are reference to different Bible versions, cross-references, commentaries, dictionaries. Here's a list of their lexical resources. Some of them I tried to explain to you. The Blue Letter Bible Lexicon page, an outline of Bible usage. Here we go. Brown Driver Briggs, Hebrew Lexicon. Jacinius, Hebrew Chaldee Lexicon. Vine's Expository Dictionary of New Testament Greek Words. There's more. Trench synonyms and Trench's synonyms, Strong's definitions, and Thayer's Greek Lexicon. Most of those things I was lugging up here. My friend and brother Chris and his son lugged them up here. And here they're available at the click of a mouse. What's your excuse? The Blue Letter Bible provides the Strong's definition and a transcription of Brown Driver Briggs in a scan of the Jacinius. If you look on the right, they typesetted the Brown Driver Briggs pretty nicely, but for the Jacinius lexicon, they just scanned it and put the image in. Here's the summary. You can go as deep as you want. Anything from find that verse all the way up to find out what that keyword means. In-depth study should not take the place of character development, though. Charitable deeds and fulfilling sacred duty. The scribes and Pharisees did not understand this. This kind of work is really for noble people. Yahweh desires honesty in the inward parts, Psalm 51. That is a prerequisite for entering these deep waters. Historically, Strong's number system pulled together several resources when it was applied to book-level tools. When these guys started putting Strong's numbers in their books, it allowed us to create bridges of knowledge. Find the word, where's it at, what's the Strong number, now go search for what it means. But now modern electronic tools build on all prior tools, and they provide a breathtaking scope of capabilities. Strong's numbering system is still in the middle of it all. Yet the big guys, the scholarly guys, in the scholarly journals, they never use Strong's numbering system. They operate at a deeper level than what I'm showing you here. Well, let's get good at what we have. Let's get good at what we know and what we have the motivation for. I appreciate your kind attention. I know this wasn't easy to sit through. But, you know, this is one of those sermons where if they really capture it online, people can look it up whenever they want, you know? May Yahweh be with you. Thank you all for your kind attention. Jose, could you wake up, please?